Jackets, free minds, free people. This is a production of the Commonwealth Foundation for Public Policy Alternatives. The Box. Inside. Outside. On.
Welcome back to the Box Podcast. This is Nate Benefield, Director of Policy Analysis with the Commonwealth Foundation. I'm joined with Ashley DeMauro, who is the State Director for Students First in Pennsylvania. Thanks for joining us again, Ashley.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me again, Nate.
I wanted to talk about some of the issues in education reform that are going on currently in Pennsylvania that are being discussed, some of the things that you're working on, and in some cases in partnership with us. One of them is seniority reform. Largely in public schools, teachers are promoted based on seniority. Their, you know, raises are determined by seniority, and layoffs are often determined entirely by seniority. I know you've talked about in the past about the importance of having highly qualified teachers. So talk about why is this system we have, and what should we do about it?
Absolutely. We're actually coming off a great House Education Committee hearing that was held a little while ago, back on December 3rd, where we were able to discuss three proposals that are before the House Education Committee right now dealing with seniority. You'll also hear the term economic furloughs in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. and so that's sometimes used interchangeably. Basically, as you stated, our current system of education when it comes to recruiting, retaining, rewarding teachers is largely based on years of service, and that's really the only measure. Unfortunately, that leaves a lot of our younger students to fend for themselves when, unfortunately, sometimes layoffs need to occur, dismissals need to occur. So no matter how well those teachers are performing, they may be on the chopping block. So what Students First likes to talk about when we talk about these last-in, first-out policies or seniority policies is first and foremost protecting teachers based on their effectiveness. And so there are several proposals, as I mentioned, before the House. House Bill 1722 is one of them, sponsored by Representative Krieger and co-sponsored by Representative Vanessa Lowry Brown, working to not only retain the most effective teachers and ensure that we're mm-hmm. exiting the least effective teachers first, but also providing for a mechanism to also address tenure reform.
Yeah. So just to kind of clarify, when a school has to lay off teachers, mm-hmm. they're currently required basically under state law to lay off the youngest or newest teachers first.
Absolutely. I mean, it is explicit in state law that these dismissals must be done in inverse order of seniority, which means if you are the last teacher in the door, you are the first teacher out the door.
Yeah. Now, are some of those teachers that you would be laying off some of the best teachers, perhaps?
I would argue that some of those teachers are the best teachers. I mean, we've heard stories in other states of their, state teachers of the year being shuffled out the door because of these seniority policies.
So what's the better, what's the legislation do? Why would it improve the way we handle it?
Absolutely. So as you may know, and as some of your listeners may know, back in 2012, Pennsylvania adopted a new educator effectiveness system. And so prior to that, we had a pretty shoddy system of evaluating teachers, which was based on simple observation, and it was a thumbs up, thumbs down system. So when we enacted this new system in Pennsylvania, it moved from a simple thumbs up, thumbs down to a four-tiered rating system, which gives educators much more information and feedback about their performance. It's also data-driven, so it's not simply a principal walking into a classroom and observing for 10 minutes and making a decision. This is about data.
So what data goes into it? What all goes into it?
Think of it as a pie. So you have half of the pie that's based on observation. So you will still have that in-person measurement, but that will also include teacher-driven evidence. So, for example, if a principal makes a decision about your lesson planning, a teacher is now able to bring evidence to the table to say, this is what I've done in order to prepare for my lessons. But more importantly, now the other half of the pie will be based on multiple measures of student performance. So for the first time in Pennsylvania, we will actually be measuring the impact that a teacher has on his or her students.
Yeah, so not just that the students are doing well, but actually how much they learn over the course of the year.
Absolutely. And it's a lot of different measures. I think there are a lot mm-hmm. of people who were nervous that we'd be basing this in part on test scores, but I really emphasize in part on test scores because we are really using a lot of very rich measurements. So not only are we using student achievement on test scores, but we're using growth as measured by our value-added assessment system so we can see how well students are growing year over year. But we're also using some building level academic measures like graduation rates, promotion rates. And then we're using some what we're calling elective data because we have 500 very different school districts in Pennsylvania, all of which evaluate their students differently at the local level. So we wanted to allow them to personalize it a bit based on their needs.
Yeah. Well, this seems common sense to me. They're like, let's try and keep the best teachers using, you know, the evaluations. Why is this controversial?
I mean, I think there are a lot of people involved in education who are interested in keeping the status quo. And I think that change in education is oftentimes scary. I think we are certainly just now starting to see the implementation of the educator evaluation system, which we had piloted for about 4 years in Pennsylvania. So we've had a chance to work out a lot of the kinks in our state prior to even passing the legislation, which was great. But I think when you start to talk about making decisions about people's jobs differently than you have in the past, obviously that becomes a little scary. So I think it's a matter of educating the general public about the current system and why it's not beneficial for students or for teachers, and really explaining that teacher quality has a lot to do with student achievement. And so it is, as you said, common sense to keep the most effective educators in the system.
Yeah. Let's talk about another, what I consider another common sense thing we can do, and that's school spending transparency. I think a lot of our listeners will remember that a couple years ago we launched PennWatch, which is a state transparency site that puts all of state budget online, employees' salaries, who's getting the money, where the money's going, to follow along and just let taxpayers see where the money goes. There's now a proposal to do that for school districts so that we would put every school district spending online and let parents and taxpayers see where that money goes. Can you talk about that proposal?
Absolutely. So for Students First, we have actually dedicated an entire pillar of policy objectives to spending well and governing wisely, because we want to make sure that governance structures and spending policies prioritize students above all else, including bloated bureaucracies. As you mentioned, there is a proposal to implement School Watch. Representative Christiana has introduced House Bill 1411. At the beginning, we worked with the bill sponsor and many other organizations to come up with an amendment to the bill so that we can ensure that really valuable information is being reported up from school districts, but then also that we are making a link between how schools are spending and the outcomes they're getting for students. And I think that's what was missing before. So I'm thankful we were able to work with the bill sponsor and several other organizations to bring an amendment to fruition about that. Obviously, the goal of everything we do in education is to ensure that our students are learning. And so that return on investment piece is critical to ensure that this system is one that's valuable and usable.
And what's the status of that proposal?
Sure. Well, it's currently right on the House floor, awaiting second consideration with amendments. So at some point, we hope that will advance out of the House and go to the Senate Education Committee for consideration.
Right. Well, another issue that's been hot on the legislature's topic for this year, but also it seems like we've been on this one for several years, is talking about charter school reform and make some changes to the charter school law. We currently have over 100,000 students, I think, in charter schools now across the state. What's currently being discussed in terms of legislation related to charter schools?
Sure, Nate. You're absolutely right. We've been discussing this for many, many years. We're in the fourth year of debate, to be exact. And so, as you can imagine, a lot of proposals have come on. And so I think we are now getting to the point where we are really looking at some of the best pieces of all of those proposals in one bill. Obviously, public charter schools and public cyber charter schools are an important option for many families. But when we implemented our first charter school law back in 97, we were on the cutting edge. But since that time, we've seen a lot of states pass us by. And so we at Students First talk about several really key issues when it comes to charter reform. That is improving the authorization processes for charters to come into fruition, and perhaps even more importantly is to improve the accountability structures to ensure that these public options are of the highest quality. And if there are ones that are not of high quality, that we either improve them or close them down so that students have really good options to go to.
Yeah, let's talk about the authorizers first. Mm-hmm. I mean, charters are authorized currently by, at least for brick and mortar charter schools, by the school district. They have to go to their current school district and get approved to almost compete for their students. What are the better ways? What have other states done that have passed us by, as
you said. Sure. So I think the gold standard for authorization would be some kind of an independent state-level commission that would have independence outside of a state department of education. It would also have a lot of expertise in not only the authorization of charter schools, but in the monitoring and the oversight so that we're ensuring quality. So that's really the gold standard. That's probably not on the horizon in Pennsylvania, at least in the near future. So at this point, we are looking to just provide multiple avenues. And so one of the ways that's being discussed is through institutions of higher education serving as authorizers of charter schools. You know, there are some benefits that come along with that. There are many other states who have allowed institutions of higher education to authorize charters. Most notably up to our north, we have New York, where the SUNY system has kind of become a gold standard for higher ed authorization of charters. I think the stability that comes along with an institution of higher education, obviously, they have a stake in ensuring that the schools in their portfolio are of high quality because that will reflect on their institution. And, you know, with their schools of education, they may see this as a real opportunity to obviously impact other areas of education as well.
Yeah. Now, what about some of the critics say that if you taking the authorization away from the school district and the school boards, taking it away from elected officials and actually losing accountability. How do you respond to that?
I certainly think that local school districts, because the decision to authorize a charter school impacts their budget, I think there should be some kind of local input into an authorization process. But I don't think that that needs to be the end game. I think there does need to be other avenues to authorization. So I think there are ways that through an application process that you could have the locals demonstrate the desire to have a charter school in that area. But I think what we really need to focus on is the desire of the parents and the students in that in that local area to decide whether or not they need a charter.
The other thing you talked about is accountability. Sure. You know, and our charter schools, making sure charter schools are accountable to taxpayers and to parents and delivering high outcomes for students. How can legislation address that? How can we ensure accountability for charter schools?
Sure. So our current charter school law is kind of all over the board. So when a local school district authorizes a charter school, they develop a charter agreement, which contains all of the accountability measures and the goals that charter must meet. But as you can imagine, with different school districts authorizing different charters, that definition of accountability varies widely based on charter agreement. What the proposal before the General Assembly would do right now is to create a standard performance matrix, which would become the evaluation measure for the performance of all charter schools in the state. And that's very important so that we're ensuring that we're holding all accountable to the same measure. And then even more importantly, that performance matrix will become the primary factor in renewal and termination decisions.
So bad charters can be shut down in ways a lot easier than traditional schools.
Right, absolutely. Yes. And currently, I mean, certainly you can terminate a charter under current law, but it's obviously not done as often as it should be. And it's not based on a really rich performance measure like this new performance matrix will ultimately be.
Yeah. How do you answer the criticism that, you know, charter schools are low performing and they're just, you know, draining funds from our traditional public schools and from school districts?
Sure. So I think we all believe that the system of funding our charter schools, in addition to the system of funding our traditional public schools, needs to be addressed in the state of Pennsylvania. Obviously, you know, we won't get too deep into this, but the system of funding for charter schools is based on a flawed foundational funding formula for all public schools. So I would like to see us first and foremost look at holistically at our system of funding to ensure that all students, no matter where they choose to go, are treated fairly in terms of funding. But I do push back. I mean, obviously, these students are making a concerted choice about where they want to be educated. And so when they do leave, money should follow them, public dollars, to another public school. And so we certainly need to ensure that that's happening. But I do think that there are some valid concerns about some charter school performance, not all. There are some really high performers in the state, but there are some low performers. And so I think that by addressing the accountability piece, we will start to ensure that all charters in the state are high quality.
Well, great. Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
Sure. I mean, I think there's a particular topic that would be of interest to your viewers as well, and that's pension reform, which hopefully we'll take up early in the year. So that's also a part of our policy agenda, most notably because we want to ensure that teacher pensions are fair and portable and you know, fair to the teaching profession.
I think that's, I mean, that's an important thing for teachers as well as for taxpayers, that we have a good retirement system in place that is sustainable.
Absolutely. So we as an organization will also be closely watching the debate on pension reform as well.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, thanks, Ashley. Is there a website people can go to find out more?
You can visit us at studentsfirst.org and be sure to sign up as a member. You can find us on Twitter at PA Students First, and also on Facebook, and you can keep up with our activities there.
Yeah, well, thanks for joining me. And for listeners, you can download this and other podcasts at the Commonwealth Foundation's website at commonwealthfoundation.org.
Wonderful, thanks.